Hello, good afternoon, welcome. Hello, how you doing?
Hello, hello. Good to be back on the Coaches Coach podcast, where we talk all coaching.
All the time.
All the time, yeah, pretty much. for those of you that are kind of new to this channel, it started off as 4.4 miles, which was basically us talking about Arsenal, Spurs, kind of Premier League and football in general, and then also talking about coaching. But we've decided to separate those and
keep the banter away from the intellect.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
If there's any intellect, absolutely. So I think what we wanted to talk about this week, I'm going back into club coaching, and the question I wanted to ask and talk about was, what do you do when you've got a brand new team, no matter what their age is, you're unaware of any talent, what talent, how talented? How do you plan that first session? Do you just go and say, let's just scrimmage and see what we're made of? Or do we do a full technical session? Let's see if the players can even trap a ball. Can they pass 10 yards? Do we just do rondos? Do we see if anybody actually turns up? My first training session was 18 girls, 09, ECNL, mixed group. From two teams. So Navy is considered this club to be the top tier, and White is considered to be the kind of reserves. And I had a mixed group, and some of my players I've met through my position at ODP and RTC. Good players, really technically good players. An age group that I love because you can grab them right now, really teach them some fundamentals of technical stuff and tactical stuff. And this is the first year these girls have gone up to three things: a bigger field, a heavier ball, longer playing time. They've gone from 9 versus 9 to 11 versus 11, from 60 minutes to 70 minutes, from a size 4 to a size 5. So these girls have got a big step up. And I've been there with my own child. She's gone from 9 versus 9 to 11 versus 11. And it was a huge undertaking for that team. We've got another 10 minutes to go yet, but I'm burnt out. I can't pass that far. So my first training session, I just scrimmaged. I sat down with a new assistant and the girl who's actually running the team right now. And I just took notes. Would you do the same?
I have to say, I think it's funny that you have training sessions before tryouts. Because tryout season's coming up, isn't it?
Well, the team is actually still in State Cup or in Founders Cup.
Right.
So I got to see their training session.
Right. So you didn't take the training session. You went to
Oh, no, no. I decided. Session. I went along and I was given the opportunity to run the session with them.
Okay.
But I didn't want to step on the current coach's toes and say, I'll take over because she knows them better than me. And I said, let them scrimmage for longer than you usually do so I can actually have them watch them play.
Right.
Because actually right now I can't go to their games, can I? Because of COVID. So yeah, I just sat back with my new assistant, great young lady, played college level. And we just sat and watched and took notes.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that's probably a good thing to do. And I remember when I took over my 05s, I was able to go and watch game. So I went to go and watch one of the bigger games. And I try to kind of hide because, you know, you don't want your influence to sort of spill over.
The new coaches there must score from 50 yards every time
you
get the ball.
You don't want to turn heads or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I think going into a first session, my first session pretty much always is going to be me watching how you receive the ball. Because for me, how you receive the ball sets the tone for everything. It's the most important of the techniques. I think I don't consider checking your shoulder and scanning as technique. I consider that as a skill. But in terms of the technical side of things, the receiving of the ball is the most important thing. If you can't receive it, you can't pass it. If you can't receive it, you can't move with it. If you can't receive it, you can't shoot. If you can't receive it, you can't do anything.
One good touch relies onto another good touch. If your first touch is bad, you've lost the ball, you've lost possession. Yeah, you're fighting for it.
Yeah. So what I want to see in that first session is how you receive. Do you open your body to receive? Are you front foot? Are you back foot? You know, just those kind of things. The awareness might not be there just yet in terms of awareness of when you can open, but I want to see that you're trying to open. I also want to see which way you're facing when you open. Are you facing the sideline? Are you facing backwards? You know, just those kind of things. So that's kind of always going to be my go-to. That's what I want to work on kind of first.
Yeah. I saw in the session I was watching, players just chasing the ball off the line. And something I'm, like you just mentioned, I've always trying to coach my teams where your butt should be facing your parents and your eyes should be facing your teammates. You shouldn't be chasing the ball off the line if you've asked for it. Your butt should be on the line, playing wide, stretching the defense, back to the wall, eyes on the field. Then you've got 10 versions of passing, rather than I've got to chase the ball out, save it, turn around, there's a defender, I've lost possession. So I was interested in that to hear your point of view, because again, it's age related as well. These are 09s, you're coaching 05s. So I got to get these girls quickly and break that habit of them chasing their own passes off the field.
Yeah, I think one of the things I always tell my players is if you start wide, then when the ball's played down the line, you've got a shorter distance to go to catch it. Whereas if you start in field, you're chasing the ball off the field. So yeah, I mean, the position and kind of side of things will help with that. But I think planning that first session is always going to be difficult. And so because especially when you get a first team, when you get a team kind of for the first time, even it's, I need to have a look at this. I need to have a look at that. I need to prove this. I need to improve that. And this is where curriculum kind of comes into it. Having a small curriculum that, first of all, having a plan for the year. Once you've got your plan, having a plan for a few years. Once you've got a plan for a few years, breaking it down into your targets, like we spoke about last week. Targets for each year, what you want to achieve, where you want to be at the end of each year. And then breaking that down into, we've got, 40 weeks of training. So basically
3 days a week,
what we do each session for the 40 weeks. And once you've done that, you can then basically, you'll have phases that you'll go into. So for example, when I've taken over my teams, usually it's after tryouts and we're going into a summer period, and the summer period is tournament.
Yeah.
So, and then also because of the age group I'm working at, they're going into high school. So I know that I only get them to August. So what I want to try to do is get the technical fundamentals across to them for the way that I want to play. So that's the foundation, Can I get you looking to move the ball quickly? Can I get you receiving in an open position, looking to switch play?
Yeah.
Because those are two fundamental sort of parts of how I want the team to play.
Yeah.
When it comes to the actual session planning, which is something I know that we wanted to talk about, it's really important to make sure you know exactly what it is that you want to achieve for that sort of session. And that's based on your curriculum. Yeah. So I'll put the question to you. How do you go about putting together a session plan?
OLLI. Orientation, learning, implementation. You have to look at, like, if we're going to do a drill or a session, not a drill, that's worked on defending, do I coach the defenders or do I coach the attacking players to bring the best out of the topic for the defenders? Who does this affect? It affects the 2, 3, 4, 5, possibly the 6. So I'll spend most of that session possibly working with the 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, because they're the attacking force. And something I've learned recently in the last couple of years is, coach the topic, but coach the opposition. Don't coach the defenders, coach the attacking team to bring out the topic for those players. The whole OLLI thing, that orientation, setting out the goals for the session, who's involved, why they're involved, whereabouts on the field is it final third, attacking third, defensive third, learning, what are we hoping to get from this mentally, physically, technically, tactically, and implementation, can we put it into a game scenario? If we have half a field, which I had this week, for 16 09 girls, it was more than enough space to do what they wanted to do. They were working on midfield possession, and they did some oversized rondos, which I thought was really good, and then they shrunk the field a little bit and had 3 different rondos where they were switching the ball around, and it worked really well, and the girls understood why they were doing it ahead of a Founders Cup game this weekend. You can download 1,000 sessions offline online. You can Google defending session for 12-year-olds, and there's a billion Google images out there. How you coach that one session is down to you as an individual, and the resources you've got at hand. You know, setting your team. Am I going to play 3-5-2? I don't know. Is my team strong enough to play 3-5-2 physically and mentally? Do I have players that can go up and down the lines? So, you know, I plan my training sessions. I always start at the back. I want to make sure I've got a good, solid back line. I mean, most of our sessions should always be goal scoring, and you can't score goals without a bad defense. So I want to make sure that my sessions are defense minded. Always finish with a scrimmage, which is the best part, especially the younger kids. All they want to do, we're going to scrimmage, coach. We're going to scrimmage. Absolutely. If we can fly through the orientation and the learning, we'll get to the implementation. So, yeah, the basic kind of stuff that we've learned as doing our coaching courses and our licensing is, you know, stage one, stage two, stage three, stage four, stage five.
Yeah, I think the whole kids asking, you know, are we going to play? Can we play? Are we going to play? Kind of fits into something called the play practice play model, where basically the players turn up and they do their warm up and then they go into a game.
Yeah.
So they'll play a game that's basically got, you know, some objectives or some kind of restrictions on it. Playing to wide goals, for example, or, you know, playing to targets or something like that.
Yeah.
And then you want to, they play like that for a little bit. Then you basically go into a skill practice or a technique practice where you're now taking the players through what it is that you want to see in the game. So for again, if it's a game where your play phase was, your first play phase was attacking wide goals. You attack two wide goals on that side. So it's directional and you defend two goals on this side. And then for your next phase, your practice phase, you can go into something that gets players looking to open their body and maybe check their scenario or check their surroundings, know what's going on around them. So you might do a scanning session, which involves receiving on the back foot.
Yeah.
And so they'll basically play something like that. So basically you've said, so in this scenario, when you're trying to attack these wide areas, go for it. I want to see what you're going to do. Okay. Second phase, this is what I want to see you trying to do. I want to see you trying to check your shoulder a little bit more, have a look at where the wide goals, you know, where the goals are, where the spaces space are. But then also when you're receiving the ball, can you receive it to allow you to attack that space early?
Yeah.
Can you receive it in a way where you can recognize where the defenders are and maybe switch play quickly or fake the switch play and come back as the defense is shifting? You know, these kind of things. And then when you go back into the end game, at that point, you should see what you've worked on in that second phase.
Yeah. And I think a lot of coaches these days, and I'm walking through some fields to get to my session, playing these kind of games where you just know the kid is asking, what if we win the ball's defenders? Oh, just give it back and we'll restart. It doesn't happen in a game. You don't give it back and restart. You attack that other team. So I think direction in sessions is really important. Not just playing like, you see it so many times, especially at high school level. Let's play 3-2 or 5-3 to goal from the edge of the box. Sure, it's game-like because you're attacking a goal.
It's not, though. I mean, then, because you're attacking a goal.
Because you're attacking a goal, but then the defenders win the ball and they just dribble it over a line and give it up.
Right.
So why not just put two goals at the other end?
Right.
And then that team has to work on their transition from attacking to defending.
Yeah.
What's their shape like?
The other thing is, how often in the game are you able to attack 6-3?
Yeah.
You know, when are you able to attack just the back line?
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of kids, just get yourself into 5-1 rondos. Unless that one is Lionel Messi, rondos 5-1 never work because Lionel Messi will always win. I mean, there's an argument about it, so maybe we can talk about it later on. Are rondos good for warm-ups? Again, is it game related having five players in a small circle passing around one player? Where's the other 10 kids on that team?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends. I think it depends on what you're using the rondo for.
Yeah.
You know,
if it's first touch, I do
a rondo that's a 4v2. And basically what I'm trying to get the players to understand is how to provide three options for the player with the ball.
Yeah.
So can we have a short option to the right, short option to the left?
Yeah.
And if those options appear and are free, can we use them?
Yeah.
While we're using them, how are we affecting the defense? And if we can draw the defense in and split them a little bit to cover the wide options, can I then get a third penetrative option, which will allow me to break the defensive line and push the ball forward?
So it
all depends on kind of how you use it, I think.
And again, it's like you can download a picture of something off the internet and call it yours. It's how you interpret it.
I mean, how you interpret it, how you coach it. Yeah,
sure. I was doing a 5-2, maybe a 10-by-10 yard rondo a couple of weeks ago. And I coach the defenders more than anything. You guys have got to work smarter, so you don't have to work as hard. Just cut down that avenue. She can't pass to the left or the right. You know that the pass has to go right through the middle, which lets your other defender just stand there and cut off that middle pass. So what you do as a first defender in that session is going to help your second defender make it easier behind you, rather than two of you just coming flat, square, where the ball goes in between. And it's just funny seeing like a lot of online stuff these days. Rondos are useless. Here's 1,000 different rondos. I like one where it's 4-2 in the middle, and then the two have 4 other outside players in a bigger square outside. That two in the middle win the ball. We then go to a 6-4 rondo and a 20-20. Okay, those players on the outside, depending on their level of skill, might be standing around for maybe 1-2 minutes if the girls in the middle are really working hard and the defenders are working lazy. But once those defenders get the ball, how quickly can they get the ball out of the square to the 4 neutral players? And how quickly can the 4 girls in the middle who are defending get their shape and act as a transitional defensive unit? Yeah. So I've been using that one a lot. Different numbers and different effect. So.
I think the players standing around a lot is a big issue. And when we go into kind of how you prepare your session, we'll talk about that. But for example, in that game, if I wanted to stop players from standing around, I would basically say every 3 successful passes, one of the players from the outside area can come in to the smaller inside area. And so you're basically increasing the amount of pressure on the players that are playing possession in the small area. And then you could also have it so that when they win the ball, they go out and they play to a bigger rondo. You could also have it, if they win the ball, they get to attack a goal. So you're learning about transition. But again, it all depends on what your topic is. And so when I'm developing a session, and it takes a while, this is maybe something players don't kind of realize, to draw planning up the session. Yeah. It can take an hour.
It's not just X's and O's. No. There has to be stages.
You basically have to know exactly what it is, and you have to be as specific as possible with what it is that you're working on. So you have to go through the W's. What is it that I want to work on? Where on the field am I talking about? Who am I going to be including?
And those three are the biggest W's of the 5.
Yeah.
For me, if you get those 3 dead right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then also when,
yeah,
what phase are we talking about? The last 10 minutes of a game and we need a goal. Are we talking about early in the game and we need to possess and control tempo? So there's so many, you've got to take all of these things into consideration.
Yeah. It's like the pillars we talked about in another podcast. There's certain pillars. There are stages of a training session and you can't get to stage 3 unless you've done, and stage 1 is usually a warm up. It's whatever your warm up is these days. It's interesting to hear how you would plan your session. What would be the first 15 minutes of your session this week?
So with a new team, I would go, my session will be, as I said, I always talk about opening on the back foot. So my session will be something around, players receiving on the back foot to open up the field for switches of play in the middle third, for example, in a possession phase. So my, again, depending on the age, if it's a younger age group, say kind of U11, so 10 years old and below, my warm-up would be a technical dribbling warm-up. So like, I'll have them dribble as many touches as possible in a very tight space. So they've got to keep the ball under control, play games like knockout, where you've got to try and knock someone's ball out of the area. Those kind of games where they start to develop their awareness and their ability to be aware of what's going on while also maintaining control of their own ball. I'll also throw in some skill moves. So this week we're going to do a step over and a scissor, and we'll learn the difference between a step over and a scissor. But then I'll also do some kind of Cuerva style ball manipulation as well. So they're starting to get, you know, you want in the first 15 minutes, you want 1,000 touches on the ball, you know. And that will allow you to, you know, as they get more familiar with the moves and they're able to push the intensity, gets the heart rate to where it needs to be for them to go into the sort of the next sort of phases of the practice. From there, if you're doing a play practice play model, then the next thing you're going to do is go into a game. So your warm-up's being used to get the players to a level where they can then go into a game and play. But before all of this, I should go back to talking about the objectives of your session. So once you've got the title, once you know what it is that you're working on exactly, then it's the objectives. What is it that you want by the end of the practice, each player to know or to have improved? You know, so if it was a receiving to open up the field for switches of play in a middle third during a transition or during an attacking phase, for example, the outcomes, your objectives might be players to recognize the benefit of receiving on the back foot,
yep,
because of the ability to open up the field. It might be for players to recognize and understand opening on the back foot can take you away from pressure.
Yep. Yep.
Lead to you attacking space, but then also relieve any pressure on the team. Whatever those objectives are,
yeah,
you know, they factor into how you kind of put the session together.
Yeah.
And then I think, again, depending on your age, so if it's younger kids, I would do some sort of a technical thing around how to receive on the back foot. So you actually go through the process of teaching them how to open your shoulders, how to open your hips, how to open that back foot to basically be able to take that ball in a new direction, move the ball across the area.
Yeah.
For older kids, I might, for older kids for the warm-up, I'm probably going to go into more of a sort of structured warm-up that involves a lot of kind of injury prevention stuff.
Yeah.
So I might do a FIFA 11. I do something called PEP. That basically involves phases, which include a movement phase, a stretching, a dynamic stretching phase. Yep. A strength building phase where you do some muscle work to start building, you know, key muscles. We then do a plyometric phase, which is developing the power. And then we go into kind of like a sprints phase, which is kind of like high intensity kind of sprinting, yeah, changes of direction, that kind of thing. And then when it goes into that next phase where we're talking about sort of the technical development in the younger kids.
Yep.
For the older kids, I'd do something very similar, but there'd be more of a tactical emphasis on it.
Yeah.
So I might not necessarily come and coach you about what you should do with your shoulders and your hips, but we'll talk a little bit more about the game ramifications. If you can do this, then this is going to be your outcome.
Yeah.
If you're not doing it or you this can't is, doing it, yeah, this is the benefit.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk about the technical piece about how you do it.
Yeah.
But you know, what you're trying to get the players to understand at that older age group is the game plan. You know, we want to sort of almost lull the opposition into a false sense of security that we are going to be looking to switch the ball every time. And then what we're really looking for is, can we advance the ball through the line?
Yeah.
Now, if the player thinks I'm going to play wide often, there's a good chance I can catch them going too early and I can play through the line. But they have to understand that is tactically what it is that we're trying to achieve. If we can get the ball and go through the middle and go to goal, absolutely. That's what we want. But many times teams are compact in the middle. And so the tactical side of things is, how can we spread these players out so we can play through the middle? Having players understand that is important. And then we'll go into the final kind of phase of the practice, which will be that second play. phase. So again, some sort of conditioned game where the outcome is similar to the first game, but they just should do it a lot better because they've done the technical work, they've done the tactical work, they understand what it is, they understand their body movements.
That, and now there's maybe a bigger, broader picture, like the playing surface is bigger. There's more restrictions maybe. There's more direction, there's targets. Is it half filled to goal? You know, so there's ramifications. If I don't open up and if I don't do that tactical part of it, my team will concede a goal. Or my team will lose possession, which could lead to a goal. So size of field is always really something that I've learned in the last 3 or 4 years is super important to a training session. You know, you can't do 7 versus 7 on a full size field because there'll be 2 or 3 kids that never see the ball. But you can do 7 versus 7 on a half size field, half the field, twice the chance of getting the ball, lots of repetition.
Yeah, I think intensity is something that needs to be factored into, you know, into the session planning. So
how hard are these kids going to work?
Well, and again, that goes into your kind of periodization. You know, if you've played a game on a Sunday and you train on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and your games are sometimes Saturday, sometimes Sunday, on a Monday, you don't want to be doing hard work. And generally, harder work, higher intensity work is done on smaller fields. Because you've got to work constantly to find space. You don't get time on the ball, you know, and there's a lot of pressure on you earlier. So you're constantly on the move at high intensity. When you go to the bigger fields, you get more into the aerobic rather than the kind of anaerobic sort of side of things. But then players get a lot more time in the walking, light jogging phases. You know, and so you've got a much lower intensity. And so, you know, when you're planning your sessions, these are things that need to be kind of taken into consideration.
You time also, as well.
Right. I was going to say, you also want to have a look at the time of each session.
Like, and I think one of my first ever sessions I did, I think I was a D license holder in Colorado. And I had kids just doing 7 versus 7 for like 25 minutes. And after about the first 7 minutes, I was like, this is getting boring. And then my coach came over and said, why don't you do 4 minutes on, 1 minute off, 4 minutes on, so they can play at a high level for 4 minutes, give you their best, and then get a minute's rest, then go back in rather than just one long game. Like, oh, so you're talking about the size of my field should change and also the time that the kids are playing, because no one can give you 100% for 90 minutes at youth level. It's impossible.
Yeah, well, not 100% at intensity of 90 plus percent, you know, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So changing the size of your field to bring out your topic and the timing of those sessions. Like, okay, I want to spend half hour on possession in the middle third. Let's do 4 6-minute sessions with 1 minute breaks in between.
Right.
Cause you know, no one can give you that much full steam. They need a break and you want it to be high intensity. You want them to be playing at game speed.
I think one of the really important things about this, you know, this style of coaching, breaking it into smaller mini chunks. First of all, you know, it's easier to ask players for maximum effort. And tell them 4 minutes
of
intense
best
work. I'll give you a minute off.
Yeah.
But then also it means in that minute off is where you can do most of your coaching rather than constantly stopping players while they're playing and stopping the flow. And again, cutting into that intensity because the intensity is used to help develop fitness and recovery, especially recovery speeds. So I think doing things, you know, in smaller bite sizes with again, depending on what your intensity for your practice is with those kind of higher
intensity. And you have to set that at the very start, you know.
Absolutely. These things should be part of
periodization is something we can talk about. It's like, you know, we just had a big game on Sunday, State Cup. We have another game in a week's time. So Monday, let's just have a tactical session. Let's work on some stuff that went right, some stuff that went wrong. Wednesday, we can start building up the stamina and intensity. And then Friday, a nice relaxed session again. So like that peak and trough, making sure your players are rested, especially the younger players, they need more time for their bodies to recover.
Especially when you factor in injury prevention. You know, there's a lot of studies that show that the kind of deeper you go into competition play. So for example, these tournaments where you go away and you play a Thursday, a Friday, a Saturday, and a Sunday. the incidence of injury on the Sunday, like, are double compared to what they were on the on the Thursday, you know? Yeah. And so especially for girls. So you want to make sure you're looking at the intensities based on a periodized plan. And that periodized plan should basically include all of your games, all of your maximum intensity kind of work.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's important. We don't want girls getting breaking down and getting injured.
And at the higher levels, I mean, I've been pretty lucky to see a couple of amazing like periodization experts. Raymond van der Veen's one of them. And he said the reason why some of these professional clubs have prolonged players getting prolonged injuries is because they don't let them rest the right amount of time. And it goes back to everything. I'm not a big fan of this, where you play in a tournament where we have two games today, two games tomorrow, and if we're lucky, we'll have two games on Sunday to 12-year-old Jemima. The professionals don't play six games in a weekend. Why should you expect a 12-year-old? I know the kids want to because it's soccer and they love it, or it's whatever their sport is, but a 12-year-old girl playing 5 to 6 games in 1 week is ridiculous. And, you know, it's the train-play kind of ratio. You should train 3 times and play once. I'm okay with that. Better quality of playing rather than play 3 times and practice once. You know, and it's another debate that we don't want to get into on this session, but I think, you know, the more and more coaches, especially the younger coaches these days, are getting the chance to study periodization. And now it's now one of the formats on, or one of the subjects on the C license, the USF C license. And I loved it. I thought it was great. I read a lot of stuff about it. I think it's super important. And when it comes to, again, we're talking about planning the session, plan your intensity around what you want and what time of the day, what time of the week it is, what time of the day it is. Okay, it's 95 degrees. Am I going to push my kids to the maximum for an hour when I don't really need to? So there's all the factors you have to put into the session.
Very important consideration, for sure.
Yeah.
I think something that you touched on earlier, which is really, really important, is although you've got your focus for your practice and you've got your objectives for your practice, the objectives will tend to be around a defensive or an offensive phase of the game.
Because those are the only two phases of the game.
Yeah. You know, if you break in the transitions and stuff, but they're still attacking, defending. Yeah. So yeah, in terms of the way the game's split, you're either attacking or you're defending, you're never in between. You should always be kind of looking to maximize your time with the players on the field by coaching both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
So for example, I'm working on 1v1 defending. I'm going to work with the defender because that's the topic. And but so I'm going to work with the defender on their defending because it's 1v1. I'm going to be talking more about the technical aspects of what it is that you're trying to achieve, but then also tactically why you want to achieve this and how it benefits you and how it benefits your team.
Yeah.
And then what you want to do is you want to stress the defender and put them into a situation where they are going to be forced to have to think about things, solve problems. And so to cause those problems, to create more problems for your defender, you give some coaching to your attacker. You know, you tell them, attack at them quicker. You know, can you fake inside and attack the outside of that front foot? Can you continuously keep the ball moving? You know, can you watch your defender? Can you watch their feet when they've planted their feet on their heels? Can you look, you know, all of these different kind of small kind of factors that can make it harder for the defender, which will put the defender on under pressure. And ultimately what we're trying to do is create players that are able to perform under pressure, you know? So it's a huge part of
it. I did my C license almost 2 years ago now. And it's one of the main things that has stood out to me. One was periodization. The second one was coach the opposition. If you want to bring out the topic of defending, yeah, still you have to coach the defenders. This is what you need to look out for. But in order for them to look for those factors, they need someone to defend against, which is like, just go wide. Can we get you out wide? Can we stretch that back line? Can we put distance between the 2 and the 5 or the 4 and the 3? Can we get penetration runs behind you? Are you focused on like blocking? So I mean, you know, when you're planning your sessions, and there's so many factors to put into it, spend some time coaching the kids who are trying to bring out the topic rather than the focus group that you're working on. You still need to work on them. I don't know what the ratio you would, I'd say 50-50. You want to spend 50% of your time focusing on, okay, we're defending in the final third. We can only do that if our attackers get the ball in the final third. And they want to make penetrating runs. They want to put you under pressure. They want to maybe isolate you, or they want to combine to get behind you. So I mean, you know, for me, the ratio would be 50-50. There's a strong element of we are working on defending. But in order for that to happen, you really have to push, Johnny. You've really got to go for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it all depends on the ebb and flow of the practice. You know,
yeah.
If the defenders are doing a stellar job, then you might not have to coach them as much, and you might have to coach the attackers a lot more to try
everyone's dream. Yeah.
You know, to try to pull a little bit more out of the defenders.
Yeah.
At the same time, if the defenders are really poor and the attackers are kind of, you know, killing them, then you need to work and spend more time with the defenders. You might even have to regress your practice a little bit. And go from a large target area for the attacker in a 1v1 to maybe a really small area that the defender has to cover, and then gradually start to build that back again. You know, and this is an important note to young coaches, old coaches, experienced coaches, you know, whatever you are. There's no shame in recognizing you've got it wrong.
Yeah, absolutely, be humble about changing your
practice.
Yeah,
and regressing it or progressing it quicker, or progressing a group of players quicker than, you know, another group. You know, we don't all learn at the same rate. There's something called the slanty slope learning sort of, I can't remember exactly what it's called, but basically it's like, if you have a slope, different people will fall in different lines on that slope in terms of their development. And so, you know, what takes me, you know, a few minutes to pick up
could be half hour for someone,
might take someone a few sessions to pick up.
Yeah.
And so your job as the teacher, your job as the coach, is to recognize that in each player and make sure that you are tailoring the coaching for the individual player to their strengths, their needs, their, you know, basically training should be player centered all the time. And there's just no, you know, you're there to work with and improve a player. It's got nothing to do with your ego. It's got nothing to do with, you know, well, hold on, this is what I want to get out of the session. And these players not being able to do this means I can't get to, you know, what it is that I want to do. You know, maybe you go and speak to the players who are getting it quickly, and you put some restrictions on them to try to make the game harder for them and draw them more towards what your end objective was, while allowing the players who aren't quite getting it to work at their own speed and work at their own pace. And, you know, so yeah.
So you're coming to the end of your session. You want to scrimmage because you want to see everything that you've orientated, you've learned, and you've implemented, and you want to see it come to fruition. Do you just let them play without any restrictions, or you got 25 minutes? I kind of like restrictions. Okay, first 10 minutes, everybody, unlimited touches. Let's just go for it. And then if it's not working, maybe, okay, certain players, you're only allowed 2 touches. Do you add a neutral? I like adding a neutral. I think every team in the world does it. You see that kid in the middle of the field with a bright pink pinny on? He's the star player. Usually it's a player who's got great passing ability. It would be like KE, for instance. Someone who's just got great vision, great awareness of where they are. And I always like numbers up and numbers down.
Yeah.
I think it makes a team work smarter and harder when they need to. Having a magic player, or, you know, the neutral, if you want to call it that, is always a great thing in the game.
I agree. I think, though, that you should incentivize that position. So if you're going to have a neutral, the neutral can lose their privilege of being neutral if they're sloppy. And somebody who's been working hard. And again, we spoke about hard work, praise for hard work versus praise for ability. You know, just because somebody's able doesn't necessarily mean that they should be given that special role of magic player and the privilege of magic player. If somebody's put in absolute graft and is, you know, picked up something quicker than you thought they would because they've been working so hard, maybe they were asking questions and showing how much they want to learn, they should absolutely be given that privilege. You know, so now you've got the privilege of being, you know, this person. It doesn't mean you can relax and rest on your laurels. If you're sloppy, I'm going to take that privilege away from you and I'm going to give it to somebody else. And that kind of keeps people switched on, focused on what it is that they're, that they're trying to that you're trying to achieve in terms of on the field, making sure players are at their level, their highest levels for as long as possible.
I think sometimes when you put in that magic player, it can sometimes have a negative effect on the game, on the scrimmage, because if that player loses the ball a lot in transitions, nobody knows, oh, we need a new rule because they had it and we're not allowed to tackle her, but they keep losing the ball with a bad first touch because they're not good at receiving. So I think, you know, having an extra player is better than having the magic player sometimes, like 6 against 8 rather than 7 versus 7 versus 1, because the transitions can tend to get mixed up sometimes. You have that magic player who's not as magic. And like you say, they have to earn that responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah, and it also gives opportunities for kids to understand how to learn when they've got an overload, how to play when they've got an overload, but then also how to play when they're playing against an overload. And you know, these are all things that, you know, whenever we're playing, we're trying to create imbalance in an opponent, and usually that's by pushing an extra player into the mix to create an imbalance in terms of an overload. So yeah. both sides of the ball have to learn how,
yeah.
to,
and I think, how to deal with that. You know, again, I think the first thing you said in this session is like watching teams do 4 versus 2 attacking a goal. Yeah, you see that in the Premiership and you see it at every top level, like a breakaway, a counter-attack team. Is that something is antiquated or is it still functional? You're practicing something that might happen once in a game. So let's practice it 1,000 times, like repetition. Let's do 4 on 2 50 times. I think the only person actually gets any reward for that sometimes is probably 50% of those players. Maybe the goalkeeper's getting extra shot practice because she's facing a lot of goals, and maybe one striker who's maybe ball greedy and just takes shots every 10 seconds. Making it 4 versus 3 makes it more competitive. First defender, second defender, third defender. You know, so again, you know, yeah, are we doing a rondo in front of goal, basically?
It all depends on what's going on. You know, if your strikers are struggling to score in games, and it's affecting their confidence, then you want to build confidence. So giving them, putting them into a session where they're having opportunities at goal, is obviously going to be, you know, to their benefit. At the same time, if you find that you're coming up against the stronger teams with stronger defenders and your strikers aren't able to create as many chances, then what you need to do is you need to go into a practice where they're playing 4v4, or where they're playing with an extra defender and they're having to basically work out how they can break down more players. So, you know, again, scenario, your situation is going to be different for every person, everything, every team, even if it's, I've got a U7 boys and then I'm going to go straight into a U7 girls session afterwards. The needs are different because the players are different. You know, so you shouldn't have one session for the two groups. You should have two separate sessions where you're focusing on very kind of, I mean, if it's curriculum based, you may well have the same title, but you may change what the actual session is, or the coaching points might differ based on the abilities of the different groups.
And certainly,
that
yeah.
Kind of
yeah.
Stuff. So,
yeah.
So, yeah.
I think the last question I got for you, just to wrap up this podcast, at what stage, if there's 5 stages, do you, if you can, and every club is different and every team is different and every situation is different, when do you bring in the goalkeeper? If they're not on the side of the field having specialised goalkeeping coaching, which every goalkeeper obviously has to have, do they come in at stage 3?
I mean,
and again, it's topic-based, right?
So I think, yeah, I think you should always plan to try to keep things as realistic as possible. So even if it was a rondo, for example, you could have you were saying earlier, having a 4v2, and then they break out into a bigger box where there's 4 players to make a 6v4. So you could have it like that, and then in the 6v4, have a goalkeeper as one of the 6.
Yeah.
So you're learning.
Because they have to work on their footwork because they're 5th defenders. Yeah, yeah.
And if the 4 can win it, they can attack the goal. If you've got 2 goalkeepers, you might want to have, you know, you might want to have them play on one field. So one group that's playing, you know, because you're going to have more than one group playing, one grid playing. One grid plays to 2 big goals. And then another grid maybe plays to 4 small goals. You know, so I think the goalkeeper, you should want to try to get the goalkeeper involved as early as possible, unless they're having specialized training.
Yeah, I mean, if you're doing like a possession drill that's based on like middle third possession only, then yeah, go get your training, go to the side, get your shot and get your footwork working, because this is the middle third, we don't need you so much. But if it's working on defensive or attacking, then and you got the access to a goal, put the goalkeeper in.
Yeah, but again, it depends quite specifically on what it is that you're working on, because there's nothing to say if you're talking about possession in the middle third.
They can't drop the ball back.
That you're, you can't sort of drop the ball back to try and encourage forwards to press a goalkeeper who could then split that line and play into the middle third. You know, so I mean, it all depends on what your topic is. Yeah, I think the focus of the podcast here for today is going to be about how you go about setting your practice in terms of knowing specifically what it is that you want to do and going through the W's to work out, you know, when in the game, what situation, who are you talking about using, you know, where are you going to be if I didn't, why are you trying to achieve this? And then using that broad kind of, well, it's not broad, it's a very specific title to then come up with the objectives. What do I want my players to achieve?
And what do I want them to learn?
Right.
Yeah.
During the practice. And then when you're actually putting the practice together, you can always bounce back to that. If I do this rondo with the 6v4 or a 4v2 leading into 6v4, what are the players going to be getting from that? How does that relate back to my objectives? Okay, well, it doesn't really work on my objectives. Okay, well, how can I change it to get back to those objectives? Because you want to be very specific in that by the end of the practice, I want my players to have learnt this, you know? Again, I hope you enjoy listening to this this episode. It's really good to actually dedicate some time to actually going into the coaching practices. It's something that we as coaches are obviously very passionate about.
Yep.
And again, if you want to have your say, please feel free to get in touch. Instagram and Twitter.
A9 Soccer.
Yeah.
Elevate Soccer and 4.4 Miles.
Those are so 4.4 miles is the other podcast, and then we've got our coaching podcast, which is the Coach's Coach podcast on Instagram.
One more time, the Coach's Coach podcast.
Yeah, on there Instagram and on Twitter, it's Coach's Coach Pod.
Okay,
look forward to hearing from you.
Any suggestions, any comments? Feel free to reach out to both of us. We're happy to take feedback and answer any of your questions. Give us something to talk about.
Yep. Have a good week.
Have a great session, everybody. Thank you. Bye.